Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your host, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Health Watch right after this message. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes, and then you pay a 17% income tax on the $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500 that you've just paid, an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. Now, that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? For more information about tax and status, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Remember, tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to my website, that's georgegordon.org. Click on the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, racketeering charges have been filed for knowingly marketing a deadly neurotoxic drug for human consumption. NutraSweet, aspartame equal, spoonful, and stumbling the public into believing that it is a safe additive. Donald Rumsfeld, the present Secretary of Defense in the Bush administration, left President Ford's administration as Chief of Staff to become the Chief Executive Officer of aspartame producer G.D. Searle Company in 1981. Shortly after that, Rumsfeld became the CEO, and the day after Rumsfeld took office in the Reagan administration, aspartame was quickly approved by FDA Commissioner Arthur Hayes over the objections of the FDA's public board of inquiry. Hayes had been recently appointed by the Reagan administration, and shortly after aspartame's approval by the FDA, Hayes then joined NutraSweet's public relations firm under a 10-year contract that paid $1,000 a day. Now, aspartame, NutraSweet, was the product of the G.D. Searle Company. In January 1977, the Food and Drug Administration wrote a 33-page letter to the U.S. Justice Department attorney Sam Skinner, and it said that we request that your office convene a grand jury investigation into apparent violations of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Skinner allowed the statute of limitations to run its course, never prosecuting G.D. Searle. Three FDA commissioners and eight other officers, along with Skinner, took jobs in the aspartame industry. Now, the Food and Drug Administration once listed 92 adverse reactions from 10,000 consumer complaints, and it would send the list to all inquirers. In 1996, the FDA stopped taking complaints, and now the FDA denies the existence of the report. Seizures, blindness, sexual dysfunction, obesity, testicular, mammary, and brain tumors and death, plus dozens of other dread diseases and ailments named in the suit, arise from the consumption of this neurotoxin. The defendant, American Diabetes Association's mission is to care for diabetics. A 35-year ADA member, diabetic specialist H.J. Roberts, discovered aspartame can precipitate or aggravate diabetes and its complications, or simulate the complications, especially neuropathy and retinopathy. His report, intended for the annual scientific meeting of the ADA, was rejected for presentation and even publication of the abstract. The 7-count indictment includes charges for violation of California Consumers Legal Remedies Act, fraud, and violations of the California Civil Code 1780 through 1784, and injunctive relief, and that the defendants be enjoined from future use or sale of aspartame. Well, a little good news on the aspartame front. Here's a little more good news on irradiated food. The serving of radiated beef in school lunches is being restricted. After thousands of letters and postcards and phone calls to members of Congress, lawmakers have placed restrictions on the serving of irradiated foods as part of the government's national school lunch program. Now, this is a major victory in the effort to keep irradiated foods, which have not been shown to be safe for human consumption, out of the food supply. The food irradiation industry, which has largely failed to convince grocery store shoppers to buy irradiated foods, has instead targeted the school lunch program, which provides free and reduced-priced meals to 27 million children nationwide. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, which runs the program, lifted a ban on irradiated foods last year. U.S. Representative Barbara Lee responded with legislation requiring school districts to inform parents and children if they're serving irradiated foods. The school lunch program was begun to ensure the good health of our students, said Lee, a Democrat from the Oakland, California area who co-chairs the House of Representatives Progressive Caucus. Now, this program could possibly sacrifice our students' health and nutrition, and that's a dangerous policy, she said. Championed by Representatives George Miller and Lynn Woolsey, also California Democrats, the language restricted the serving of irradiated food was included in the Child Nutrition Act, which President Bush signed into law on June 30th. The law forbids the federal government from requiring school districts to serve irradiated foods, and it forbids the federal government from subsidizing the higher cost of irradiated foods, and requires containers with irradiated food to be labeled as such. The law also encourages school districts that serve irradiated foods to offer non-irradiated alternatives, and says that school districts, parents, and students should receive factual information about irradiation. So how did we get here from there? Well, back in 2002, a last-minute change in the Farm Bill directed the USDA not to prohibit the use of any approved food safety technology for food destined for the school lunch program. This was a very thinly veiled attempt to permit the use of irradiated foods in the school lunch program. The change was the handiwork of U.S. Senator Tom Harkin, an Iowa Democrat, who then chaired the Senate Agriculture Committee. Harkin is a longtime supporter of the food irradiation industry. Harkin's effort was backed by the now defunct SureBeam Corporation of San Diego, once the nation's leading irradiator of ground beef. Key officials at the USDA also supported the measure, as did the American School Food Service Association, which used the same lobbyists as SureBeam. Interestingly, the ASFSA, remember that's the American School Food Service Association, along with several major meat industry groups, opposed testing school lunch beef for salmonella, arguing that the tests are too costly and should be replaced with irradiation. Even though the USDA received more than 5,000 comments from the public that ran 11-1 against lifting the irradiated meat ban, the agency announced on May 10, 2003, that it would start offering irradiated meat to states and school districts. Only a few of the nation's 26,000 school districts reportedly have begun purchasing irradiated ground beef. Several local bans have been passed, including Los Angeles, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Berkeley, California. Statewide restrictions in California are being debated. Now, legislation introduced in California to restrict the use of irradiated food in schools has passed the full assembly and is now being considered by the California Senate. The bill, called AB 1988, initially barred the State Department of Education from ordering irradiated ground beef for schools participating in federally subsidized meal programs. However, pressure from powerful industry organizations, including the California Cattlemen's Association, the Grocery Manufacturers of America, and the Chamber of Commerce, caused the bill to be watered down. It now would require school board approval before irradiated foods can be served, and it requires irradiated menu items to be labeled as such. Let me make a comment here. We have the same problem with this hamburger with E. coli as we had with milk at the turn of the century. It is true that dirty milk caused disease, and it posed a problem that needed a solution. The solution was either A, pasteurization, or B, clean up the milk supply. Since it's harder and more difficult and costs more to clean up the milk, it's easier to sell dirty milk and then pasteurize it. The problem with pasteurized milk is that it kills the essential enzymes necessary for digestion. That's why so many people are lactose intolerant. Now, we have the same problem with the processing of meat. When we handle cows one at a time, it's fairly easy to keep the meat clean. When we handle cows at the rate of 400 an hour in a manufacturing plant, like Swift or Armor Star, it is very difficult to keep the meat clean. So, when we have dirty meat with E. coli, we're faced with the problem. Should we clean up the meat supply or should we irradiate it, which will kill all of the enzymes and give us the same problem that we have with milk? That is, yes, we can kill the E. coli, but wouldn't we be better served if we cleaned up the meat supply, left the enzymes intact, so that we have a better, more nutritious product? It's a choice that we have to make, and my choice is clean meat and clean milk in place of irradiation of dirty meat and pasteurization of dirty milk. It's a wild new concept that I advocate highly. Stand by for more right after this. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. These politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, staff, or management of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to my website, that's georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call Direct 417-273-4967. Well, thousands of people who received blood products prior to 1999 should be warned that they may be incubating variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. It's called VCJD. It's also known as the human form of mad cow disease. Now, you should be aware that in the United States, we do not have, nor do we tolerate, mad cow disease. There was one case found in Washington State, but that was an anomaly. In America, we don't have mad cow disease, and that's because it's politically incorrect. We have another name for it here. It's called Downer Cow Syndrome. And we have about 100,000 Downer cows that we see or that occur in our feedlots every year. We take those cows and we send them off to the rendering plant. And we mill them down and we process them out and we take the residue and we dry it and then we put it into the pig feed and feed it to the pigs so that you can eat this Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease, commonly known as mad cow disease, but politically correctly known as Downer cow syndrome in the United States, to the pigs. Then we take the offal from the pigs and we send that to the rendering plant, and we reduce that down, and we dry it, and we put that into the cattle feed. And the reason we do it that way, and we've been doing it that way since 1943, is because we have over-farmed and worn out our land to such a degree that the protein content of our grains will no longer reach 17%. So in order for us to have 17% protein feed, we have to put animal protein into that feed, and it's been discovered that the manufacturer of animal feeds made from animal protein causes mad cow disease. That's for those of you that didn't know that little story. So the health chiefs are to take the unprecedented step of writing to all of those patients who received the blood from donors who subsequently died of the brain-wasting disease. Okay, now here's another little factor. In the United States, we have about 3 million people, 3 million people who have Alzheimer's disease. So let's plug 3 million into our little Texas Instruments computer here. And now we add in times 0.13, which is 390,000 cases of Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease, which are found in the United States every year. And we know this because a major university in the East, I think it was Johns Hopkins, but either that or Columbia University Medical School, discovered that when they autopsied Alzheimer's patients, they found 13% of them were tested positive for or showed positive for Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease. So we know that we have the human form of mad cow disease alive and well in the United States. Now, we don't want to admit this because if we did, it would be bad for the cattle industry. Now, I'm not opposed to the cattlemen or the cattle industry. I'm one of you. I'm one of them. I have cattle and sheep, but I don't produce them in the same way that we're producing beef in the United States on these feedlots, feeding them bypass protein, and that's what that's known as, bypass protein. Now, the move ordered by the Department of Health in England is the strongest sign yet that ministers there are preparing for a new epidemic of the disease spread through blood. Until now, they've always maintained that infection through a transfusion is merely a theoretical risk. Okay, well, now we can We can cross out theoretical risk because now we know it causes it. Now, the letters are to be sent out to patients, including hundreds of Scots, at the end of September, after the Health Protection Agency carried out a risk assessment on UK patients who received blood or plasma products prior to all plasma being sourced from the US in 1999. It is understood the letters will urge each patient to contact a specialist. The VCJD risk assessment, first announced by Westminster Health Secretary John Reid in December last year, was ordered at the time as a precautionary measure after a patient who had received a transfusion from someone with VCJD also died of the disease. Now, although the donor showed no signs of the condition when they gave blood in 1996, they developed the disease in 1999 and subsequently died from variant CJD. The recipient of the blood died in the autumn of 2003, and at a post-mortem, the CJD was found in their brain. On December the 17th last year, Reid told the Commons that the case was not a proven causal connection, but that the possibility of this being transfusion-related cannot be discounted, and it was the first report in the world to warn of the possible transmission of the variant CJD from person to person by way of blood. In March, he banned blood donations from anyone who had received a transfusion since 1980 to prevent CJD being spread. The Department of Health last night refused to reveal the outcome of the risk assessment, but it is understood that behind-the-scenes talks have been ongoing with senior health officials and groups such as the Hemophilia Society about the potential outcome of the exercise. Other categories of patients, such as those with leukemia, burn victims, and pregnant women, can all be treated with blood products, but those most exposed are likely to be hemophiliacs who use the products to help their blood to clot. The latest figures from the National CJD Surveillance Unit in Edinburgh, Scotland, show the number of deaths in the UK definitely or probably caused by variant CJD now stands at 147. However, news of the Department of Health move has fueled fears of a new epidemic of variant CJD, the human form of BSE from blood. Now, I want to point out that 390,000 people in the United States have it, or have had it. That's because 13% in this country who have Alzheimer's, which total in the neighborhood of 3 million people, test positive for it on postmortem examination. So I just wanted to share with you that we have a bigger problem with Jacobs-Creutzfeldt disease in the United States than they have in Great Britain. Other categories of patients, such as those with leukemia, burn victims, and pregnant women, can all be treated with blood products. Oh, boy, let's all run down and get treated with blood products, shall we? Now that we know that of Alzheimer's patients, 390,000 of them test positive in the United States, that's a whole lot more than in England, where it's been banned now. But it's not banned in the U.S., and there's no blood test to make the determination. I've said in the past, I think that this Jacobs-Creutzfeldt disease is going to prove a bigger threat than AIDS. Let's see if I'm right. The latest figures from the National CJD Surveillance Unit in Edinburgh, Scotland, show the number of deaths in the UK definitely or probably caused by CJD at 147. Well, we got 390,000 in the United States, and we don't even call it by CJD. We call it Alzheimer's disease. Then when we test these Alzheimer's patients, 13% of them have CJD. And have you heard anything on the national news or the national media to tell you this story? I haven't heard a word. Not a word. It all comes from reports from the CDC. I can put these reports together, but they're never broadcast where anybody's going to hear them. It isn't that the information is being squelched or hidden. It's out there, boys and girls, but you've got to dig it out if you want to find it out. Well, Bruce Norvell, a hemophiliac from Fortros near Iverness, said it's very possibly or possible that we will have a secondary epidemic by way of blood from the initial victims who contracted VCJD by eating infected beef. So it started by eating infected beef, and now we see that it's being transmitted by blood, which they denied in the early days. But now we have a case where we've actually connected the dots. And so now they say, well, you know, we're not really too sure, but you know, there's that possibility. Possibility. Oh. Well, like I said, you know, if the possibility is that remote, y'all are run out there, especially if you're a pregnant woman or you're a hemophiliac, and you ought to have some blood products. I want to point out something to you that in the scripture, in seven places, it tells you not to eat blood. I know it's a wild new concept. And of course, you hemophiliacs out there would say, well, we don't eat blood. Well, of course not. You mainline the stuff. You inject it directly. Now, you mean to tell me that if God tells us not to eat blood, that you can circumvent that law by taking it intravenously? And There's no danger from the use of blood as long as you mainline it, but don't eat it. Now, I'd say, come on, boys and girls, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee, wouldn't you? By the way, that's in Leviticus 3, verse 17. That's one of them. Here's a study that reveals 95% of the top food companies fail to inform their stockholders of the risks that are posed by genetically engineered foods. Now, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, 95% of the top food companies in the United States, fail to properly inform shareholders about the risks posed by genetically engineered ingredients, according to Duty to Disclose. The failure of food companies to disclose risks of genetically engineered crops to shareholders. A new report released today by the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, it's called the PIRG. They point out that while one mistake involving genetically engineered crops is estimated to have already cost the food industry over $1 billion, and more shareholder resolutions have been filed regarding GE issues than any other issue since apartheid-era South Africa, only two of the top 35 publicly traded food companies even mention GE or GE ingredients in their annual reports as required by the duty to disclose imposed by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Well, hang on, we got to take a break right here. We'll come back and I'll give you the balance of the study, which reveals that 95% of the top food companies are mum on the subject of genetically engineered foods. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of the population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, those fears of the early opponents of the tax have been more than fully realized. And by the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%, and by the time Franklin Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th before earning enough to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family had to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, the income tax and Social Security violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, for more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine, send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about genetically engineered products. A study reveals that 95% of the top food companies fail to inform their stockholders of the risks posed by genetically engineered foods. And shareholders need to know. Shareholders need to know about the products that their company makes. Or so said the USPIRG safe food advocate Richard Kaplan. He said, quote, by not disclosing the many risks posed by genetically engineered crops, food companies are failing to meet their legal duty to be fully honest with shareholders, unquote. You know, a statement like that makes me want to puke. Why is it more important for shareholders to know that the company, Campbell's or Archer Daniels Midland, is making genetically engineered foods than it is for the consumer that eats that bull feces to start with? It would seem like to me that it's more important, and that the FDA and Congress and the President and the USDA have a higher duty to label the products that we buy in the supermarket that says this product, Campbell's Chicken Noodle Soup, contains genetically engineered products, if in fact it does. I don't know that it does. Campbell's Chicken Noodle Soup may not have any GE, but how do I know that? Campbell's doesn't put on there, we guarantee that there's no genetically engineered products in this product. Now, I do have some cookies upstairs that were made with non-GM ingredients. No hydrogenated vegetable oil. No artificial sugars or sweeteners. Okay, so the package tells me, okay, at least I know that we don't have white sugar, artificial sweeteners, hydrogenated vegetable oil, or GE products in this product. And to get that kind of a product, you got to go to the health food store. And why is it that these major corporations like Kraft or Campbell's or ADM don't want to label what's in it? It's because they know full well that most of us wouldn't buy that crap if we knew what was in it. And that's why I've said over the years that there is nothing in a modern American supermarket fit for human consumption. Let me repeat that in case you missed it. There's nothing in a modern American supermarket fit for human consumption. And if there is, it is so well hidden in that store that you'll never find it. There are drugs like penicillin and aromycin in that food. There are sugars, drugs, artificial sweeteners, hydrogenated vegetable oil, pasteurized and homogenized, genetically engineered, additives, emulsifiers, toxins, poisons, and E. coli. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's what you're eating. Let me repeat that in case you missed it. When you go to the supermarket and you buy your basket of food and you bring it home, you are ingesting drugs, sugars, artificial sweeteners, hydrogenated vegetable oil, pasteurized and homogenized and genetically engineered, additives, emulsifiers, toxins, poisons, E. coli, and much, much more. So I say it's not fit for human consumption, but here's an organization that's really ticked off, and they say, well, my God, you have to tell the shareholders of these corporations. That's why I said it makes me want to puke. Now, I agree that there's probably a duty to disclose, and the duty to disclose describes the risks posed to food companies from genetically engineered ingredients, including product liability lawsuits and loss of insurance coverage, damage to reputation and consumer rejection and international renunciation and cross-contamination, economic loss due to sudden regulatory changes. Now, while federal regulations require that investors receive full disclosure of any material facts about the companies in which they own shares, only Kraft Foods Incorporated and Interstate Bakeries, makers of Hostess Cupcakes and Wonder Bread, disclosed to their shareholders that genetically engineered ingredients might pose a material risk to shareholders. And as a result of that, now that I know that Interstate Bakeries, that's, you know, Hostess Ding Dongs and Wonder Bread, and Kraft, K-R-A-F-T, Kraft, have genetically engineered foods, I won't buy their products. I don't buy anything. Hostess, Interstate Bakeries, etc. Of course, I'm kind of a health food nut anyway. And I don't eat out of the supermarket, but occasionally I buy some stuff out of the supermarket, you know, like mustard or ketchup or mayonnaise or something like that, you know. I might buy something like that. Well, not the mayonnaise. I can buy mayonnaise that's organic. But here's my point. You are what you eat. And the reason that we Americans are so sick, that is only 1% of Americans are symptom-free. 99% of us have symptoms of something. 99% of Americans are sick. They've got a disease. They've got symptoms. That's why we go to the doctor. You go to the doctor because you're sick. I can't remember the last time I went to a doctor. Why would I go to a doctor if I'm not sick? Now, just as crops require sunlight to grow, investors need the sunlight provided by full disclosure of material risks in order to grow their portfolio, said Michael Leone of Green Century Capital Management, a mutual fund company. The risks of genetically engineered foods should be disclosed so that investors can make informed decisions, he concluded. That's what I thought. And I thought consumers should be informed with a label on the can that says that this product has genetically engineered foods. Now, I noticed that MSG, I've done programs in the past on this. Let me show you how deceptive these guys are. I mean, they're criminals. They're criminals at the FDA and the USDA. Why do I say they're criminals? Because they're liars. They're thieves. They're cheats. You see, MSG, monosodium glutamate, is a toxic poison. And they put it in a whole host and plethora of foods. Besides that, it's addictive. And that's why Colonel Chicken, you know, you want to go back and eat some KFC, Colonel Chicken, that's because it's got MSG in it. Well, they have various names, like natural flavor. Do you know what natural flavor means? MSG. They got about 10 names for that MSG. In case you're wise, and you're looking on the container to see if it contains MSG, well, they got about 10 other names for it. So they're telling you that the MSG is in here, but they're putting it in here in a name, like natural flavor, so that you won't recognize it. That's why I call them criminals. They're lying to you. So it's the old Madison Avenue trick. See, we're going to give you full disclosure. You'll see this in Reader's Digest. If you want to test the criminal behavior of the FDA, try this. Go to the Reader's Digest and look at one of these ads for Prilosec or any, I don't care what it is, any of these drugs that they're peddling, and then turn the page. See, on page one where they're selling it, you see this girl smoking a Salem cigarette, swinging in a swing under a big live oak tree, and God, it just makes you think of health and safety, doesn't it? Turn the page, and you got a lot of fine print. Now you're going to need a 10-power loop that costs $30, a 10-power jeweler's loop to read the fine print on the next two pages, which is the disclaimer. Because if you take this stuff and it kills you, the disclaimer limits the liability of Searle or Pfizer or any of the companies that make these drugs. That's why they put them in there. It's a legal liability. It's product, consumer product liability. So they give you the full disclosure. Now look at the section in there where it says side effects. Read the side effects and then ask yourself, would any sane, rational person take this drug that the manufacturer tells you plainly causes diarrhea, constipation, or blindness, and death, and some people, and so on and so forth? I mean, just read the side effects and ask yourself, would any sane, rational person eat this, ingest it? Industry estimates maintain that 60 to 70% of all processed foods on American grocery store shelves contain GE ingredients. Human safety testing by the Food and Drug Administration is not mandatory, nor are companies required to label GE products. And a recent poll by the Food Policy Institute found that 78% of respondents thought it very important that the food they purchased does not contain GE ingredients, and 94% believe that GE food should be labeled as such. Now get this, 94% of us boys and girls believe these foods should be labeled. Congress, the President, the FDA, the Department of Agriculture, the multinational corporations like Kraft will never put those ingredient labels on the cans. Hell will freeze over long before you ever see a can marked GE products. The best you can do is go to the health food store and get a product that says it contains no GE products. Now that's the place to buy. Somebody said to me the other day, said, well, maybe you rich people can afford that, but us poor folks can't. The reason you poor folks can't afford it is because you spend your money on booze, broads, and cigarettes. Now, if you got money for cigarettes, Jack Daniels whiskey, and a prostitute every once in a while, then you got money to buy good food at the health food store. Don't give me this crap about I can't afford it. Furthermore, most of you have health insurance, and that health insurance costs you $200, $300, $400. Well, it's $9,000 a year, I think, was the average I saw the other day. $9,000 a year. Let's see, $9,000. Let's divide that by 12. $750 a month. My goodness, on $750 a month, I'll bet you could live pretty well out of the health food store, and then you wouldn't need health insurance, would you? Mull that one over for a minute, and then tell me, well, I'm poor and I can't afford to eat right. So that's why I eat out of the supermarket, which doesn't have anything in there fit for human consumption. I wouldn't feed that crap to my dog. Stand by for more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, so for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, morticians fear CJD victims and procedural guidelines for mortuary care of CJD, that's Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. And that is where the original manuscript ended in 1998. Since that time, we really haven't learned that much more about CJD, but as more and more embalmers become aware of it and the potential danger that it presents, it becomes obvious that we as a profession need some guidelines or protocols on the handling of known or suspected cases of CJD. What follows then is what we hope is a reasonable set of procedural guidelines for the embalmer based on what we know today. Before using them, read the entire article on CJD so that you better understand the disease and its risks to you and to other employees. And you also need to know the legal and business risks of not preparing the body. We recommend that you read the other material available listed in Appendix A to make a fully informed decision. So here's the notice and disclaimer. These CJD preparation guidelines are based on the knowledge available to the industry at the date of writing. That's 5604. These procedures may become outdated based on more current information. The embalmer must keep appraised of the latest information available. The procedures outlined are, in the professional opinion of the author, a reasonable response to the potential risks posed by CJD. The individual funeral home owner and embalmer must make their own independent decisions based on the risks presented by preparing or not preparing a body with known or suspected CJD and be responsible for them. The decision then to proceed or not to proceed is purely the decision of the funeral home and or the individual embalmer, and the author cannot be held responsible for the consequences or results of either decision. Now, the exposure level rating of 1 low to 5 high indicates the level of potential exposure to the prion. Basically, no exposure to blood or cerebrospinal fluid creates a negligible or very low potential exposure level. Exposure to blood or certain other body fluids produces a medium potential exposure level, since the causative agent for CJD is found in the blood, though in small amounts. Exposure to the brain and or cerebrospinal fluid produces a high potential exposure level, since these and to a lesser degree other internal organs are the primary reservoirs for the prion. It does not in any way imply a risk of developing CJD, since the chances of contracting the disease from exposure to blood, body fluids, brain, and spinal fluid is not yet known. I got to pause here and make an editorial comment. This thing called a prion was discovered about 10 years ago, I'd say now. It's been quite a while. The disease first showed up in a bunch of people down in New Guinea who were cannibals. So evidently cannibalism produces this mad cow disease or Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease. They called it kuru, K-U-R-U, kuru. And they discovered that it was a thing called a prion, P-R-I-O-N, that was the causative agent. It's not something that's alive. It's not a virus and it's not a bacteria. We don't really know what it is. The guy that discovered kuru thought that it might be a crystal. You can't kill it in an autoclave, and it can survive temperatures up to 700 degrees, and that's the melting point of lead. Molten lead is where you get to the point where you can destroy this prion. I mean, you've got to incinerate this thing. This is why when autopsies are performed, the pathologist will wear a moon suit with a face mask. He wears chain mail gloves so that he can't cut himself while he's doing this autopsy. 13% of Alzheimer's victims in the United States have this Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease. Now the morticians are going to take this body into, and they're going to prepare this body. They're going to come into contact with it. They're going to embalm it, and they're going to put it back together, and they're going to sew it up, and they're going to do all these thingies with it. And they come into contact with the body fluids in this dead body that the pathologist, and get this, once they've used these scalpels and instruments on one of these bodies, they can never be used again on a live human being without transmitting the disease. That's how virulent this prion is. Just thought I'd share that with you. So pathologists wear moon suits and chainmail gloves, and so here's a guy writing an article here. Well, now when you take the body from the autopsy and you prepare it for the funeral home, here's a couple of guidelines for you guys working in the funeral home. It simply makes sense, however, he goes on to say, that the lower the exposure to the prion, the lower the chances of contracting CJD. But even maximum exposure to the prion is no indicator that a person will eventually contract CJD. The term intact is defined as a body that has not been autopsied, has no brain or spinal column injury, and does not display any excessive blood or body fluid leakage. All right, so when you get a body in and it hasn't been autopsied, you're at low risk level. Since we maintain that a person deceased with CJD cannot technically be embalmed, since the body cannot be disinfected, which defines embalming, we will use the word prepare or inject to refer to the procedures that on any other body would be considered embalming. All right, so when you got one of these CJD bodies, you cannot embalm it, because the definition of embalming means to disinfect the body. You're going to kill all of the pathogens in it. You're not going to embalm a body with CJD because the embalming fluid will not kill the contagious agent, which is called a prion, which is probably a crystal. Universal precautions refers to an approach to infection control that considers all deceased human bodies to be infectious and must be handled as such. OSHA, that's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration regulations, require that universal precautions be practiced. This requires the proper use of personal protective clothing and equipment. Did you get that? This requires the proper use of personal protective clothing and equipment, and in the case of a CJD case, universal precautions must also take into consideration the possibility that the deceased could have other diseases of concern to the embalmer. Little things, you know, like AIDS or CJD or... Therefore, recommendations concerning universal precautions will be based on other diseases also, and indeed should be utilized on every case regardless of any assumed cause of death. For instance, we recommend the use of face masks, not because CJD is an airborne disease, there's no evidence to suggest that, but because TB is an airborne disease, and the principle of universal precaution says we assume the person may have this and other diseases also, and we must protect ourselves accordingly. How do you like that, boys and girls? Now that's the CJD. Now you can take any of these infectious diseases, you know, things that have caused real plagues, like bubonic plague. They buried bodies of people who died from bubonic plague 500 years ago. And when you dig those bodies up, down in New Mexico today, the bubonic plague is still virulent. How do you like that? Now this stuff is called a prion. It's something that's not a virus, something that's not a bacteria, something that's not a fungus, something that's not a mold, something that's not alive. It's an infectious agent that gives you a disease that's 100% fatal 100% of the time. And 13% of Alzheimer's patients have it, and it's incubated and manufactured in human bodies. It comes from the spinal cord or the brain tissue. It comes from animals such as sheep and cattle. It's called scrapie in sheep, mad cow disease in cattle in England. In this country, we've camouflaged it. We don't call them mad cow. We call them downer cows. And then we pretend like we don't have it over here. My God, boys and girls, let me share with you this politically incorrect opinion. If the CDC tells us that we have already autopsied 13% of the people with Alzheimer's disease and they have CJD, CJD is the outgrowth of mad cow disease, do you mean to tell me that there's no mad cow disease in the United States? We just have mad people disease, but no mad cow disease. Makes you want to run out and eat some hamburger, doesn't it? And what goes into the hamburger? Well, all of the crap that can't be sold in any other form goes into what we call hamburger, including 30% fat, which, remember, God told you not to eat. And then he told you not to eat blood. Do you remember that? No fat, no blood. Do you think God told you not to eat fat and blood because he had his head in the wrong end? Or do you think maybe he might have known what he was talking about? I'll just throw it out for your consideration. You can decide for yourself what it is that you want to do. So anyway, here's your morticians and their risk. All of you morticians out there now share the same risk that the pathologists have, except that until May 6th, nobody ever told you that you were facing that risk. All right, these politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, The Law Hour and Editorial Review, are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the staff, management, or the network, or of this radio station. Now, for more information about The Law Hour and Editorial Review, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call the law school, 417-273-4967. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Well, there's the signal. It says my time's up. I've got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.